Welcome to the Sports Pro Podcast.
Hi everyone, and welcome once again to the Sports Pro Podcast. My name is Owen Connolly. I'm the editor at large at Sports Pro. Hope you're well. Now then, we have spent a lot of time recently, some of it on the podcast and some of it on our other outlets, looking at who runs sport in 2021, where the points of contact are with fans, what's going to generate commercial opportunities, and what kinds of organisations are going to be in a position to capitalise on them, as well as a few other factors. And we're in the unusual position today of speaking to someone who has been central to the running of a federation for some time, but has since had cause to develop a vision of it from the outside. Sarah Lewis is a British former Olympic skier who had served since 2000 as the Secretary General of the International Ski Federation, the FIS. That was until she was abruptly removed from the post by the FIS Council in October. Despite that, she has returned this year to run for the Federation's presidency, with the long-serving Gianfranco Casper set to step down in June after 22 years in that post. If successful, she would become only the fifth president in FIS history and the first woman to hold the role. She is running against Swedish billionaire Johan Elias, the founder of HED, who was actually nominated last year by GB Snowsport, as well as Swedish Olympic Committee president Mats Ayers and Swiss Ski president Urs Lehmann. Lewis, incidentally, was nominated by the Royal Belgian Ski Federation. The reasons for her sudden departure last year are not publicly clear, and they aren't something she expands on too much here, though she does suggest that some water has passed under the bridge from her perspective, and she does also discuss some of the ways in which she's tried to learn from that experience and prepare for a different kind of leadership role. So what this conversation is about, for the most part, are the kind of broader challenges that snow sports face in the 2020s, like representing an ever more diverse range of disciplines and sporting communities, and meeting the generational challenge of climate change while also reaching out to new regions. Some of the trials ahead will also be familiar to leaders from other sports, stimulating participation and interest while also understanding what it is that younger fans might want, embracing digital and developing new commercial assets, a few of them potentially in partnership with private investors, while also building an inclusive governance structure that can properly serve a whole sport or series of sports. Much of this is explored in a strategic document Sarah has produced called The Peace Map, and whatever the political dimensions of this race or how it unfolds, it makes for an interesting overview of the evolving responsibilities of international federations just now. So all of that is ahead, and as mentioned, these are themes that are also explored in some depth in the latest edition of Sports Pro Magazine. That's issue 113, which is out now. You can get hold of your copy by heading to sportspromedia.com. And here's another quick announcement. We've got something a bit different coming up for the next two episodes of the podcast. We are going to be putting one out on each of the first 2 days of Sports Pro Live, taking place this week as we're speaking on the 28th, 29th and 30th of April. The 30th is devoted to our new expert-led masterclasses, which will be well worth checking out. But at the end of each of those first 2 days, we'll be reviewing some of the sessions on the main stages. And we're going to be doing it live. That's right, the Sports Pro podcast will be live. It'll be fully interactive as well. Or at least you'll be able to ask us questions via the event platform, which is pretty interactive for a podcast, I'd say. You'll also be getting it here, of course, on the usual channels, but if you do want to take part as it's all unfolding, head to sportsprolive.com and register for an event pass. We're going to be going on around 6 p.m. British Summer Time on the 28th and 29th. I say around, that's in the schedule. We'll be going on at 6 p.m. British Summer Time. Obviously, many other good reasons to register: a fantastic speaker lineup, virtual networking opportunities, and those masterclass and show and tell case study sessions among them. Look out as well for select sessions live on our social platforms throughout the event. But yeah, sportsprolive.com to get involved should be great. Look forward to that and see you there if you are joining us. In the meantime, here is Sarah Lewis.
Print, digital, events, podcasts, Sports Pro.
Sarah Lewis, candidate for the presidency of the International Ski Federation. Welcome to the Sports Pro podcast.
Thanks, Owen. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Glad you could come on. There's a lot to get through, Sarah, with you know your history in skiing and your vision for the FIS, and you know you've put out this piece map, which I think is really interesting for not just snow sports, but for kind of sports federations more generally. But I just wanted to set the terms first of all by thinking about what kind of a federation the FIS is, and you know how that changed in your time as General Secretary there.
Well, FIS, the International Ski Federation, it's the biggest winter sports international federation. It's a successful, stable governing body. It's grown over the last 20 years from a membership of approximately 80 to 135 member national ski associations. A fairly large proportion of that are what are called associate members. It means that they're actively participating in the events. They also can organise their own events, but because of their membership numbers and their participation, they are not full members, namely with a voting right. So that's really the only significant difference. They have entitlement otherwise to full participation. I think the most important evolution is, of course, on the field of play, and the significant increase in the status and the visibility of the six disciplines which are governed by FIS and on the programme of the Olympic Winter Games. So looking back to 1998, the Nagano Games, there were a total of 33 events in the six disciplines and on the programme, and that will now be 55 at the upcoming Beijing 2022 Games. So the growth over the years is particularly focused on building the traditional events and the formats in order to add new ones that are targeted at younger and perhaps less specialist audiences, particularly when it comes to the major global events like the Olympics. For example, the most traditional of all the sports, the one that was on the very first programme of the Olympic Winter Games in 1924, cross-country skiing, has added sprint and team sprint events, shorter formats, dynamic, head-to-head, and then adapted some of the traditional individual start formats to include mass start head-to-head racing and the skiathlon, which has basically the two techniques, the classic and the skating techniques, and a moving pit stop midway through where they change their equipment in the middle of the race. Ski jumping now has women's events on the programme of the Games, as well as at the World Championships, and has its own very successful World Cup series. There are mixed competitions as well, both as part of the World Cup, the World Championships, and now also at the Olympic Winter Games. Mm. Nordic Combined has added the sprint events. That was back in 2002. And the women are on the programme of the Youth Olympic Games since Lausanne 2020. So they're aspirational to be part of the programme moving forwards. Then alpine skiing was the next event to be integrated into the Olympics. And since 1998, it's added the team parallel competition, two men and two women. The individual parallel event has been part of the World Cup for several seasons, and it was carried out at the Cortina 2021 World Championships in February for the very first time. But the biggest evolution of all, and specifically targeting the youth market, has been with snowboard, free ski and freestyle skiing, where the number of events there have really increased dramatically since 1998. At the time, both disciplines were on the programme. It was the debut for snowboard, which included only the parallel GS and the halfpipe at the time. In 2006, then snowboard cross came in 2014 in Sochi. The slope style was also added. in 2018 at the last Olympic Winter Games, Pyeongchang. Big Air was part of the program, and now for Beijing, the team snowboard cross will be on the program. Freestyle, originally in 1998, had moguls and aerials, and they had to wait a while until Vancouver 2010, for ski cross to be added. In 2014 in Sochi, halfpipe and slope style were added. And now in 2022, Beijing 2022 Games, there'll be Big Air and the Team Aerials event. So it's been a pretty dramatic and important development. And in fact, these specifically youth-oriented events have been important not just for the fifth disciplines, but for the Games as such. They've been a catalyst to increase a lot of other such youth-focused events for the IOC throughout the rest of the Games. When it comes to off the field of play and developments over the last 20 years, of course, governance has been an important focal point, especially in recent years, with the afflictions that have really touched on sport. And FIS raised its status within the international federations through the governance survey report that's published every 2 years. From the first edition, which was 5 years ago, through to last year's publication, where FIS made the A group of the top seven international summer and winter Olympic federations, the only winter one, with some good improvements. But nevertheless, there are also some areas that that still are below the minimum threshold. And FIS was also a pioneer when it comes to many other areas. The end of the 90s, FIS also included blood testing as part of the doping controls in the 1990s, and undertook very intense activities when it came to the fight against doping, to working from the outset with WADA, and very much supporting and being integrated into their works with doping scandals at the beginning of the 2000s, which made it an absolute necessity. So this was very important. The introduction of the action sports, snowboard, free ski, freestyle, as I've mentioned already, have been very important. Then other governance areas, signing up to the United Nations Sport for Climate Action Framework, the second international federation to do that, the first winter. The same applies to assigning jurisdiction for dealing with anti-doping cases at the first instance to the Court of Arbitration Anti-Doping Division. And they serve, therefore, as the independent doping panel. So there have been quite a number of areas. I mean, we could spend most of the podcast going over them, but it's not about reflecting on the past 20 years, but I'd like to really discuss with you the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a catalogue there, and it's, I suppose what it reflects is that you have a federation that people thought of in quite narrow terms, I guess, 20 years ago, that is now responsible for a huge breadth of not just competitions, but cultures and so on, when you think about the implications of involving, you know, things like big air snowboard and freestyle and all that type of stuff. You've got very different profiles of participants and certainly profiles of fan when it comes to that. Do you feel like the federation was on the right path for that when you were in your role as general secretary, or were there things that you felt it needed to change in order to adapt to that kind of scale of representation?
Certainly, there's a great stable platform in order to evolve, in order to change and to adapt, and the time is right now. So we've got this opportunity, and that's exactly the focus of the peace map, of the plan to move forwards.
Yeah. We'll come onto that in a sec. I'm going to kind of break that down and look at some of the areas that takes your candidacy into. But, you know, the first thing I suppose we do need to talk about, you left quite abruptly after a long time as General Secretary last year. What are your thoughts now on the manner of that departure? Do you have... First of all, do you have a better idea of why it happened, what happened there? why it was that the board decided it was time to move on, and how you, you know, how do you feel about it more widely when you're coming into this particular race?
Well, of course, I've taken the opportunity to reflect on the situation. But yeah, as all athletes, you learn from your experiences and use them as a lesson for the future. And that's really exactly what I've done. For me, the snow has melted. It's history. It's what's happened. I'm looking forwards. The council who took the decision, it hasn't affected the relations in any way with the members, with the national associations. I had really great follow-ups from them afterwards, and I've had contact with council members pretty much on an ongoing basis since then, and we're meeting now as part of the whole candidacy process. So, yes, of course, it was a tough decision at the time, mostly because it was the eve of the season and an unprecedented difficult season with the whole COVID protocol to be able to implement to ensure that we had a credible, functional system that the authorities would accept in order to stage events. And I'd really been leading that process within the organisation and everybody connected to establish it with a passport scheme, with protocol, with COVID-19 support groups in all disciplines, with contact to the local authorities. But it was possible, thanks to the basis that everyone had established, to carry out pretty much a full season, which, of course, I applauded.
Mm. And, you know, you mentioned that you've taken the time to reflect and to kind of build on it. What are some of the things that you've tried to implement from that experience? How has it affected the way that you think about leadership? Because, you know, you are now putting yourself forward as the leader of the organization.
That's a very good question, and that's been exactly the point, really. I mean, I was a very focused and a dedicated Secretary General, CEO of the organization. I lived, I ate, I slept my work, and very much committed to it, and I was very driven, and that can be overpowering in some cases. And what I have done is undertaken an Institute of Management Development Business School education. I approached them and asked them really to consider my situation. I explained what I was intending to do, and they put me through the Inspirational Leadership Program. So you undertake a very thorough 360 at the outset, analyze your qualities and your weaknesses, of course, and then address them. And so it was a tailored program that I've just concluded, actually. Mm. And it was very much focused and designed on making this transition from becoming the CEO to becoming the elected leader, where you've got a different role. And it's necessary not only to be what you call a pace-setting leader, where you're really just driving things forward yourself, but very much to build up the visionary, the affiliative side of things, to reach out and create a democracy within the organisation, and, of course, to empower the responsible persons. And that's been a key focal point. I've also undertaken a role as a lead mentor in the first winter sports global accelerator for startups, for startup innovations, and then very much taking on that role, leading the group, building up partnerships, working together with the startups and the team who are helping guide and support them. And I also jumped in as a shareholder and board member in a couple of small, exciting startups. So started to make those transitionary steps, but my full focus really has been on preparing the candidacy, the peace map, outreach with the industry, with the member associations, with the sport as such, and of course across the wider sports movement.
Mm. How has that affected your candidacy in a couple of ways? First of all, you know, you've had some time, not that much time relative to how long you were there, but you've had some time out of the organization. You've taken on some new ideas through these courses and through these other roles that that you've adopted. You were obviously thinking about this run for the presidency before last year. So how has that affected all of your, how has that affected the platform that you've created and your thoughts on the future of the Federation?
Well, it certainly hasn't affected it negatively from either standpoints, both in terms of considering the candidacy and any relations either. What it's done is it's made me an outsider in terms of my independence. And that's a very important asset to have when it comes to leading an international organisation. But I'm still an insider when it comes to the knowledge and having all the tools to undertake the role of FIS president. Mm. So that's how I think things have changed a little bit, but certainly not when it comes to my own memory bank, my own knowledge and experience. And the fact is that that's something I'll be very much sharing and using.
Yeah, so you feel like it's something that's kind of, I guess, changed the character of your candidacy in a way. It's made you less of a continuity candidate and more, you are in a position where you feel like, okay, I can be the person now who can present a more innovative approach to things.
Yeah, that's right. You know, as the Secretary General, then you're responsible for executing the decisions of the Congress and of the Council, and that the administration are following that line. So this presents a completely different situation where you are guiding and working together with all of the stakeholders in order to establish that and then pass on and, of course, then support the administration and support the committees who are then executing those decisions. Mm.
Does it make it more challenging, though? Obviously, there will have been a lot of things said. There will be preferred candidates. There will be, you know, you kind of move out of that bubble. Does that change the challenge for you as a candidate?
It changes it, but from my perspective and from the feedback that I've had from the member associations, certainly not in a negative way. Perhaps the opportunity to be able to be somewhat more open in terms of communicating the changes that I believe, and from the discussions with the member national associations and the stakeholders in the sport, that really are necessary now to be able to represent those.
Hello, I'm Matt Rogan. I've spent my career creating and scaling businesses in sports and entertainment. And now I'm talking to smart leaders inside and outside sport to get their ideas on managing change and building towards a better future. You can listen in on the Playbook podcast, a collection of candid, agenda-free conversations full of practical advice your company can work with. Get your new episodes right here on the Sports Pro feed and check out the rest of the series wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, let's look at some of the things that you proposed. It's all built around this piece map that we've referred to a couple of times already. But, you know, there's a lot in that. It's quite comprehensive. You know, I'm sure people will want to take the time to have a quick look at it, because I think it does provide a vision for the responsibilities of a federation more generally, not just FIS, but the How would you break that down? What would you say, you know, what's the pricey, what's the elevator pitch for that?
Well, the overall vision is to transform FIS, respecting and celebrating its rich history and traditions, to become a global movement for world skiing and snowboarding. So the objective is to effect a progressive, a forward-looking change, to evolve the organisation as a modern, a versatile, a diverse organisation, working very much hand in hand together with the national associations and the stakeholders as an integral part of the governance and the decision making. So there are basically three main pillars, and the main pillars are to revitalize the revenues in order to generate more resources to come into the sport, to be able to invest in the sport. The second one is to have member-centred governance, as I mentioned. And the third one is basically snow sport. Snow will be at the centre and the wider areas connected to that. So I can go into a little bit more detail about each of those pillars.
Yeah, sure.
Well, first of all, when it comes to revitalising revenues, the goal here is to increase the global profile of the sport through expanding the international viewership. And the opportunities are there now thanks to digitalisation. It means that the restrictions that are in place with the sport being mostly broadcast in nations where it's well known in the country and therefore the national or geo-located broadcasters are buying those rights and showing it, those opportunities have opened up in a more significant way than's been happening for the last 20 years also with Eurosport, for example. But digitalisation will give us that possibility on a global basis. And to do that, it's going to be important also to evolve the attractivity of the formats using broadcast innovations, to raise the profile of the sport considerably, widespread promotion proactively, for example, also building the network of the athlete ambassadors, the legends, other influences. And then a big one is partnership with winter sport tourism, because this is one of the unique features of snow sports, skiing, snowboarding. The fact is that it's a recreational sport as well. That's what people do in their holidays in the winter time. Not only the persons who live in the mountain communities, but those who are able to visit them for their holidays and enjoy it as a recreation. And those partnerships are already, of course, there because they are very much behind the organisation of events and major events. But there are many more opportunities to connect much closer to recreational skiers, to make them part of that whole digitalisation and the community. Then an important one that we'll touch on a little bit later, which is the emerging winter sports economies, the reaching out into new regions of the world. And there's one very important opportunity coming up in less than a year, which are the Beijing 2022 Olympic Winter Games. A new licensing program for companies, products, services involved in winter sports is also on the agenda. And to support in terms of giving their advice and their expertise, I've been able to put together a visionary advisory group with a number of key personalities covering all of those areas. Broadcast, digitalization, winter sports tourism, the ski industry, the manufacturers. And this is going to be a very important group who are going to be there to provide their time freely, but not a decision-making body, just to advise and to support of new opportunities, which will hopefully increase the opportunities when it comes to generating resources to invest in the sport.
Yeah.
So that really touches on revitalizing revenues for the sport.
Yeah.
And that means, when I say for the sport, that's to support the national associations with their teams, because they are the stars, the athletes, with their athletes, and running their events, high-quality events. And then, of course, there's a professional management that will be supporting them in place, which is in place by FIS, have independent persons. But that's, as it were, an overview of the ecosystem when it comes to the investment in the sport.
Yeah. Let's stay on that subject just for a second and stay on the kind of commercial picture and I guess the job of a federation in that regard, because I guess it kind of comes back to what we were talking about at the start, which is that it's a much more diverse ecosystem than it used to be in terms of the sports that are involved or the disciplines that are involved. But the role of a federation has already grown from just executing events, organizing and executing events and kind of setting rules and governing and providing platforms and forums for national associations and liaising with the Olympic movement and other kind of supranational bodies like that. That all that side of things is pretty well established, but it's this challenge of how do you move from, on the commercial side, just the rights generation and selling project to something that's a lot broader. You know, you talked about things like digitization there. I know that you've had thoughts about things like whether there are assets that you can develop with private equity partners, and how does a federation like this have to change in order to be able to deliver some of those, against some of those objectives?
It's about all stakeholders coming to the table and talking with each other and supporting each other, because the rights are held by different bodies. When it comes, for example, to the World Championships, the rights to the World Championships, when it comes to commercial and broadcast, are held by FIS, and they have been commercialized up until and including 2025. So that's really one platform. And then when it comes to the World Cup events, it's the organizing national associations who are the owners of those rights. So it's going to be very important to intensify the discussions between the rights owners, the national associations, the rights holders, the commercial agencies who are involved, and FIS in terms of World Championship rights, but also in terms of a coordinating function. And there is an opportunity now. The door's opened. You've reported on it quite significantly about the potential investment from private equity. It represents an opportunity for sport to bring in new resources to help finance the sport, the national associations, the organisers, working with a proven commercial partner who are ready to invest in the sport. And their objective is, of course, to grow its value. So everyone, all the stakeholders will benefit, the shareholders, in fact, as they all become. So that's what's got to be done. It's having that discussion all together. And during the meetings that I'm having at the moment with the different national associations, those who are organising the World Cup events, the major events, there is certainly the readiness to do exactly that.
Mm. And in terms of that, the commercialisation of the sport, and particularly if you're talking about sales of assets or joint ventures with private equity or what have you, you know, do you have a sense of where the lines would be, so as you don't have a kind of conflation of governance and commercial responsibilities, particularly when you're involving outside actors? Well, how would you approach that? Where do you see that developing? Because it's still quite new.
The governance is very clear. The responsibility for the sport, for its organisation, for its governance, its regulations, this has to remain with the governing body, with FIS, with its member associations, when it comes also to the responsibility for its athletes and its teams. An investor is exactly that. And the investor is advising, obviously, on the commercial aspects, and they want to grow the sport. But there we all have a common objective, because that's really what all of the shareholders are interested in doing. That the investors are mostly interested from a financial perspective. The International Federation is interested in promoting and developing and growing the sport internationally as widely as possible in order to excite more participants to want to actually participate, to take part, to develop also the size of the tourism industry. And then the national associations, they want to grow the value of the sport in order that they can raise and generate more resources to invest in their teams and their athletes. So it's one common ecosystem that everybody will have the same ultimate objectives, albeit with their own specific reasons.
Mm. I mean, the other side of this that I think a few federations are having to look at is, you have private groups, whether that's commercial promoters who are setting up competitions, you have groups who are driving participation, whether that's physical participation or kind of a physical digital hybrid. I mean, to use an example, parkrun in athletics would be the one that most people would be familiar with. And in that case, they've actually done an official partnership with World Athletics, and has actually kind of incorporated Parkrun's efforts into growing the sport. It's not always going to be that straightforward in the next few years as some of these organizations emerge and some of these companies emerge. What's the attitude that you think a federation like FIS has to take? I mean, I guess there is a bit of a track record of incorporating other sports and other cultures and doing it relatively without too much friction. There's always people who have different ideas about this, but how do you see that part of a federation's job changing?
Well, it follows the same line in terms of everybody sitting together, and Parkrun is a great example. And there's actually a pretty comparable situation within skiing with what you call the mass event cross-country skiing races, the World Lockpit, the marathons, as it were, of snow sports, which are huge events, mass participation events. So there's a series of them, the World Lockpit taking place all over the world, and they are part of the FIS calendar. So there is a World Cup Tour, which is drawn from that, from those World Lockpit events. And again, so they're at the table, and how can we really harness and cross-promote in order to have more public participation events, driving the interest and increasing the actual number of participants, but also providing something at a recreational level that every person can participate in, because they won't all reach the very top level of the sport, but they should be having fun and enjoying doing their sport. It's healthy, it's good recreation, and that's kind of a major factor and a responsibility of an international federation, is to promote the sport on a global basis.
Mm. And then how do you bring those pieces back together? As we said, within the sports and industry at large, you have a move away from the centrality of live TV rights packages and commercial sponsorship packages that are purely event focused. It's happening at different speeds in different sports, but it is something where sports have to think about what the kind of the totality of the assets that they have, rather than just, okay, we make the money here and we spend it here kind of thing. How do you see those things coming together so that you have fans of the sport who, some of them are participants, some of them are TV viewers, some of them are both, some of them are the very high end or the very engaged skier who has a lot of interest in equipment and everything else, and then you have the person who's interested in the odd holiday, and you have the person who's just kind of has some passing interest in the lifestyle and the nice pictures and stuff like that? How do you bring all of those parts back together?
Well, that's one of the benefits of having digital platforms, is that it does give you much more of an opportunity to be able to tailor to different interest groups in terms of whether they're a casual viewer, or if they're an extremely dedicated fan, or if they are a newcomer. Now, for example, having set up esports for alpine skiing now just 2 years ago, this is certainly something with a great potential for the future across other disciplines to further engage with that as well. So you've got completely different interests and persons who are following and viewing, and the platforms do need to be tailored for their different interest groups, and hopefully you can steer their interest into becoming more and more intrigued about the sport, to the ultimate objective, which is for them to do it themselves.
Get the very best of Sports Pro sent straight to your inbox. Head to sportspromedia.com and sign up for the Sports Pro Daily. You'll get a roundup of all the biggest stories, features and opinion from our team every single morning. You'll find that all and much more at sportspromedia.com. Sports Pro, connecting and inspiring the business world of sport.
Now, we've looking at this commercial conversation and the commercial evolution of federations, we've kind of covered a bit of the second two parts of your of the second and third part of your peace map, which are member-centered governance and snow sports in 2021 and beyond. So kind of looking internally at how the Federation might arrange itself, and then externally at thinking of snow sports as a, you know, as a collective thing rather than an assortment of disciplines. But what are the key areas in each of those that you'd pick out as being at the heart of what you're trying to communicate?
Yeah, I'd like to give you the headlines to those. Obviously, the focus of your listenership is very much on the commercial side. But when it comes to the governance, it's really necessary to be a member-centered governance. It's not FIS from the top down. FIS is an organisation of its members, and that's the national associations, and they need to be integrated into the governance and more regular communication and effectively with the members to obtain their input into the direction of the organisation, to harness the great expertise that there is within the 800 plus members of the committees and within the elected council, to increase the representation. An organisation, as the United Nations says, needs to be represented at the leadership levels by its participants, because they know that their challenges and their circumstances. So there's no question that the diversity of the organisation at the leadership level needs to better reflect its membership. Mm. That means not only from a gender perspective, but it means also from the regionality and the resources that the different levels of member have. The athlete engagement can be further increased. There's a very active athletes commission, and to actually filter that down into the disciplines somewhat more effectively will be important. We touch here on an important one, which is the integration of the organisers who are carrying out the events and the ski industry. Their involvement too, they invest very heavily in the events particularly, and the athletes and the teams, and they really have an absolute important role to play within the future. And a big one, the fact is we absolutely need to address in a proactive way the situation in regard to sustainability, to climate change, to undertaking actions, and also to promoting and communicating what is being done. So that's an important element of when it comes to the member-centred governance. And then moving on to snow sport and beyond, snow sport will always be at the heart of what we as an international sports federation are doing, and will be the driving force for all activities. The, as you called it nicely, the supranational international organisations, the IOC, plays a key role. The Olympic Winter Games is the biggest platform, the biggest showcase to promote the sport to a much wider audience. So having a strong network there is essential and really has to be maintained and further developed, actually. There's a strong FIS development program that's been built up over the last 20 years to support the emerging national associations. And now this has reached its level where it needs to be personalised according to their individual circumstances. They're totally different. Even within those 55 plus members, they have different interests in terms of the disciplines that they can even carry out in their country or how they see their objectives as a federation. This also connects to having strong legacies. The fact is, it's important to be very welcomed at all of the venues. The events have a fairly big impact, and they've got the opportunity to have an even more positive impact so that they're always welcome back. And that also connects with social responsibility, brings many great opportunities. And under the revitalising revenues, I already mentioned the partnership with Wintersport Tourism, and that belongs here as well. Connecting the recreational skiers, the snow sports enthusiasts with FIS, and then interaction across the wider snow sports organisations. There are several. There are also candidates for potential participation in the Olympic Winter Games. So they're really the headlines, and there's a lot more detail to be able to talk about, but you can find that on the website.
Yeah. One of the things that I wanted to pick up on there, and this is it's quite a poignant challenge for winter sport, I guess, because you want to continue the commercial growth of the sport, you want to continue expanding the participant base. At the same time, the environments where people can actually take part in winter sport, the natural environments are receding. And there are ways that you can create facilities for people, but it's a difficult message to strike, isn't it? If you think about what the practice of winter sport means to people in places where there has always been a kind of natural snow and ice environment. What's the role that the winter sports federations have to play, and what's achievable? What constructive input can you have in developing more sustainable sport?
As I've said, tackling climate change and having an absolutely solid sustainability philosophy is one of snow sport's major challenges, and it's got to be addressed through concrete actions defined by a new sustainability committee to implement the new manifesto that FIS has established. It still has to be approved by the Congress. Was put together in 2019, approved 12 months ago by the council, and now that's time to really roll out the action points. It incorporates the framework and the objectives of the United Nations Sport for Climate Action, and so there are concrete measures that are stated within those that have got to be put into specific action parts, and they're really, everybody stands behind this, no question. The industry, tourism, and we need to promote the actions that are being undertaken, but not at all be complacent and contribute to finding solutions and really undertaking activities in a more sustainable way, both within the organisation, with the events, and in terms of the sport as such. It's very visible. Snow, the changes within actually the snowfalls, the temperatures have a major effect, not only on the sport, but particularly on the livelihoods of a lot of people when it comes to the mountain communities. So tourism is central to their existence. The sport is central to their existence. And here we're absolutely committed.
Yeah. But I mean, you have to square that with there's Olympics in Beijing next year, which is both a big opportunity for the growth of winter sport, but at the same time, it kind of highlights some of the challenges when you think there's a huge development of facilities there. There's, you know, that kind of you want people to be able to take part in winter sport, but you've had to create, in some cases, winter facilities where there weren't any before. It was a similar picture in Sochi, and I know this is the Olympic movement, so it's a slightly different thing, but where is the balance between that kind of development and the messaging that you've just outlined there about the importance of protecting some of these environments for people who are engaged in winter sport in colder parts of the world, let's say?
Well, the fact of the matter is that the Beijing Games have been undertaken during now an era, their preparation have been undertaken during an era when the IOC has really engaged with sustainability and environment activities. And so they've done some absolutely remarkable work in terms of adopting excellent best practice sustainability measures when it comes to actually the building the venues, using a large number of existing venues from the Summer Games from 2008. When it comes to transforming them from summer venues to being used for the Winter Games. And the fact is that they're not being developed only for one-off usage for an event, but this is where at least snow sports have got this this huge advantage insofar as they are tourism recreational activities for people. Mm. Last winter, the ski resorts have been opened, the venues are ready, and the participation from locals, but also thanks to the high-speed train coming from Beijing to go to both clusters, they've been astonishingly good. And that means that they're providing a resource for the population, also in the interest of their own health, the interests of getting outside and doing activity, and for the local economy and developing it. And that's all part of sustainability. The venues have been built very much with the ecological measures in mind.
Okay. Let's come back to this race just to bring us to a close, or bring us towards the close. What are your expectations for the race, first of all? And obviously you want to win it, but what kind of a conversation do you want to be starting within your federation over the next few weeks?
Well, effectively, the conversation is very much focused on the future, on the opportunities that we have, from a solid base, without any shadow of a doubt. But the reason that I've decided to run is because I receive such significant support, not only after my exit from FIS, but before then, and subsequently, and it's been continually growing. And the fact is that I've got the qualities, the capacity to be able to lead the organisation in an inclusive way, to involve the members very much within the governance. It's their federation. To empower the different persons, the experts, the committees, in order to undertake their function. And the fact is, being a woman, it's a bonus for FIS. It's a balanced sport on the field of play, but there are no elected representatives from this gender group, which is representing pretty much half of the participation base. It's a very balanced sport on the field of play, and similarly across international sports, there are currently only three women. One retires next year. The IOC has made a lot of proactive advances, but not yet in the federations or the NOCs. And so FIS has got the chance to elect a woman who's got the necessary qualities to be the president. That's what's important. It's the qualities that count: experience, deeply rooted knowledge, an extensive network within FIS, within all of the stakeholders in the sport, the IOC, throughout the Olympic movement, with the necessary diplomacy, integrity, inclusivity. And I've got plenty of energy and drive to do it. And in these days, and should always be the case, of course, that the sponsors, the partners of the sport, they demand that organisations with a profile like FIS have diverse representation on and off the field of play and in its leadership. So these are key attributes, along with sustainability actions, with good governance, that they connect to with their companies and they want to be associated with. And that's very much values that I stand by too. And it'll not only earn the organisation, its members, great credit for electing a person, a woman of my capacity, but it'll raise its profile throughout the sport world, the organisation, and society at large. And I'm ready. I'm prepared and capable to deliver from the first day. I'm absolutely located right on the doorstep of the headquarters, working hand in hand with the members, empowering all of the elected officials and the management to engage. And there's a lot to do immediately. The pandemic will not be concluded the day after the election, certainly not. That needs to be prepared for the upcoming season that is then only a few months into the future. And as we've already discussed, the Beijing 2022 Games are just around the corner as well. So that will demand a great deal of focus. And both of those I'm closely connected to and can immediately activate things there. So, yeah, there's a lot to do. And that's why I see the fact that I'm in a very strong position. The communication with the voting members, but with the wider stakeholders as such, has been very constructive, very positive, very open in terms of listening, taking on board the views and the demands and the questions when it comes to the national associations from a critical and a constructive perspective. And in 12 months' time, then there'll be another election because this is the final year of the serving president's term. And then it'll be up to the members to judge again. Did I fulfill their expectations? And are we on the right pathway? And if so, then they can re-elect me. And if not, then they can take another decision. But I do feel that I'm deserving of that chance in terms of what I can bring to the organisation.
And then in terms of snow sports more widely, what are your hopes for it? Whether you win next month or not, what are your hopes for it? Or next month in June or not?
Well, that it certainly grows its global profile. It maintains a dominance when it comes to snow sports and winter sports, carried out in a sustainable way with an organisation that everyone can be proud of. The athletes will be at the centre. They'll be celebrated, the stars, and it can be a reference for other international federations in terms of the way it works in a collaborative, supportive way, working for the sport in order to really to develop it.
Thanks very much, Sarah.
Well, thanks very much. It's been certainly an interesting discussion with you, Owen, and I certainly enjoy your podcast as well. You've covered a very wide range of topics over the last months, and they keep me going when I'm doing my morning workouts as well. So I think very topical.
Very glad to hear it, and speak again soon.
The Sports Pro podcast is published by Sports Pro Media. The producer is Ed Dixon.